Lord, thank you for your precious word that you have entrusted to us and your Holy Spirit that quickens understanding in our hearts and moves in application. Father, I pray as we come this morning to your word that all of it would be clear, and some of those things I know I had questions about this week, that those things would be answered and just all the dots would be connected and there would be a deeper understanding of who you are and your faithfulness and your sovereignty, and Lord, that our time in our small groups would be sweet as well. Thank you, Lord, for just our time together this morning. Again, may it be a time of learning and growing and fellowshipping together. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so there, the first thing that you should have in front of you is this. And Jen folded it so you could see. It's made to be folded like this and put in your notebook. If you want to, and it'll make more sense as I go through it, but my husband did the lines, and because I can't draw a straight line with a ruler, is to cut and attach them so you have one long, right, continuous thing. So, but that's not necessary. You can do that later. But I just want to let you know that it was designed that way so that you can see continuous from Genesis to Revelation, what we're going to be doing this morning. Does everybody have one?
So we cut this in half?
Not now, but yeah. If you want to, you can cut away. It's an option.
I don't have a paper.
Yeah, it's an option. So how'd everybody do with the lesson this week? Yeah, so everybody can participate, and we can have a great discussion this morning. Awesome. So I want to start and review just a few things that I've actually written down here, so you don't have to write this first line that we're going to be looking at here. So we started in Genesis, right? That was where we started at the beginning of the study. We looked at creation. We looked at man being in the Garden of Eden. We saw that man was sinless and he had fellowship with God. Just the perfect, right? Perfect. Perfect, perfect. And then we see in Genesis 3:6 something happened. What happened?
Man fell. Sin.
Right. So there's the fall, and his response is what he goes and he hides from God's presence. And we know that sin separates, and the consequence was death, both physical and spiritual death. Then in Genesis 3:15, we see God talking to both Satan and the woman and man, and I just wrote a brief thing with reference to the woman's seed shall bruise Satan on the head, and Satan shall bruise him on the heel, which is that first reference to the Messiah. Then in Genesis 3:21, we see that Lord made garments of skin cover for both Adam and Eve. And obviously that was the animals that he had just created. We don't know exactly the time lapse there, but certainly he's having to sacrifice creation to do that. In Genesis 3:24, we see man being sent out of the garden, and then the cherubim are stationed at that east gate. And that's important to remember when we look at some of the things down the road here. So then in Genesis 4:26, we see Enosh is born. And then you see that first reference of, and I'm sure they're obviously in that time frame. I tried to take some highlights. But Enosh was born, and then men began to call upon the name of the Lord. So there's this notation that they are calling upon the name of the Lord. And then two chapters later, wickedness of man is great, and every intent is evil continually. And then there's not far down now, what's going to happen? Noah. We've got Noah, who in the midst of all this is walking with God, and obviously he builds the ark, many years of building that ark, and his family and two of every kind of animal are the only thing that's preserved on the earth at that time. And after the flood, Noah builds an altar and performs a burnt offering. And we mentioned a little bit about that, the tracing of offerings way before he ever set the law up for offerings. And this is one of those evidences of that. Then, of course, then God makes a covenant to never destroy flesh with blood or with the flood, and that the rainbow was going to be that sign. So then in a couple more chapters, we see, mind you, everybody coming off the ark is saved. And then Babel happens. Most of us know that story, right? Where they are man's desire to reach heaven. And then we see 10 generations from Noah to the time that we see the Lord speaking to Abraham, making that everlasting covenant of land, nation, and his descendants being as many as the stars. And his response in Genesis 12:8 is that Abraham was going to build an altar and call upon the name of the Lord. Then that same covenant is affirmed with Isaac. And Isaac's response was Isaac built an altar and called upon the name of the Lord. Then we see in Genesis 35 that Jacob's name was changed to Israel. And he gave a drink offering and an oil offering to the Lord. And then there's this promise God makes on top of the ones that have already been made, that kings were going to come forth from him. So then we remember the story or the account of Joseph, his brother sending Joseph and being sold and all of that. But then at that point, famine then brings those 11 brothers to Egypt. And then we see that period of time where there's a new pharaoh, then, you know, they're multiplying and they've got wealth and they've got land and they're prospering. And then they become enslaved in Egypt. So then that brings us to Exodus, where Moses is born. He's from the house of Levi. He's saved and raised in Pharaoh's house. And then the account of him fleeing Egypt. What's so amazing about all of these accounts is, again, God's sovereignty in all of this. There's a purpose behind all of this. Everything, hopefully, as you've seen, as we've looked at the tabernacle and looked at all the plans that God had for the Jews and for the Gentiles, there's a purpose in the plan, and as Jen said yesterday, it's exact. And I love that. It's exact to the date. If we were looking at dates, it was exact. And exactly how God purposed it to be. So then in Exodus 3, the angel of the Lord appears. And at this time, that first exposure of Yahweh, God reveals himself as Yahweh to them. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I want you to bring my people out of Egypt, and I will redeem Israel. So again, the progression of saving the Jews and eventually the Gentiles. Exodus 6:6-7. So when we start going into Exodus, and again, because we've just been there, I didn't cite a lot of references there. Exodus 6:6-7. I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. In 12:3, we studied this a couple weeks ago, the Passover, and that the firstborn of Israel were preserved. And then this is about after 430 years, they come out of Egypt and they're redeemed from slavery. And then the first reference you see is this glory of the Lord in Exodus 24:16 rested on Mount Sinai. Moses then receives a pattern for the tabernacle. And then again, it's affirmed Yahweh will dwell with them. In Leviticus, we're given the standard for holiness and the sacrifices and the festivals we looked at. And that kind of brings us up to part of our lesson. So Exodus 40:34. So Exodus 40:33-34. So Moses erected the court all around the tabernacle and the altar and hung up the veil for the gateway of the court. Thus Moses finished the work. Then the cloud covered the tent of tabernacle, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. So what happened when Moses finished putting the tabernacle together?
God came.
I'm sorry, what was that, Helen?
God came.
God came. Yeah. Yeah, God came. I love that. Right, because the glory was over Mount Sinai, and then there was this promise, I'm going to dwell with you, and here is the fulfillment of that. Okay. So how does God's glory fill that temple?
In a cloud.
In a cloud, right. Yes. Jen, who defined Roseanne? Filled. Tell us what filled means there.
No room left.
No room left. I think that's pretty simple, right? There was no emptiness. It was completely filled. It's like filling a cup. There is nothing that's void or empty there. So the glory of the Lord filled the temple. What might have been the significance of that action?
No one could be there but God,
right?
Mm-hmm. They knew he was present.
Yeah, his presence was evident. Correct.
And it showed them that God was with them.
Yes. Right, because remember we saw the cloud during the day, and what was at night?
Fire
at night. So that presence was evident 24/7. And it didn't matter where they were. They could see that. So that was it.
Well, you know, too, that Aaron was so excited to get in there. And then he asked, too.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
It's like, I only need myself, you know, right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So what occurred when the cloud was taken up?
They moved.
They moved. Okay. So this cloud and fire led Israel, right? Okay.
It's fun to think that the Spirit of God led them.
Yes.
And the Spirit of God indwells a believer and leads us.
Right. Yeah, and we're going to study that next week. This originally was all one lesson, so it's impossible to discuss that in an hour. Okay, so the Shekinah glory, and we've talked about this a little bit, being a term that you don't see in the Bible, and it's a word that the rabbis used after the Old Testament to refer to this glory or this God dwelling in the temple. And so you see that consistently through history then, that the Shekinah glory is what the Jews use in reference to the presence of God. So God distinguished the nation of Israel in several ways, but one of the most unique ways was by his presence of his glory. And we know that the very presence of the cloud and the pillar of fire by night was that which filled the tabernacle and led Israel, guided them. So then we've got the glory in the tabernacle. So then on your handout, Joshua. So you remember Joshua was the one that was called to lead them into the land. And he did so. And as he did so, the Lord gave Israel land to possess and live in. And the Lord gave them rest. And Israel's response to that is, we will serve the Lord and we will obey him. Now, we've heard that before, haven't we? Yeah. And this is another generation, right? Because the previous generation, they didn't make it into the land. So then we move into a time where the, now again, tabernacle is still being used during this time, a period of the judges. And during this time, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And the comment before that in those two verses are, because there was no king. Well, that was the reason before there was, but they did have a king, right? God was the one that was to be their leader. And yet they're calling for a king. So then King David is anointed king. There obviously was a king before that. I couldn't put everything on here. King David. So he had a heart for wanting to build the temple, and yet he obviously did not and wasn't allowed to build the temple. He did make preparations, and he received the plan, and he, you know, had wealth and all everything ready to go, plan and whatnot, and then he passed it off to his son, who was then going to build this first temple. King David walked in God's ways. He was the king who brought the ark into Jerusalem. The tabernacle was in another place, but he brought the ark specifically to Jerusalem in a separate tent in readiness to be brought into the temple when it was completed. So King Solomon builds the first temple in Jerusalem, and that's 480 years after coming out of Egypt. So at that time, that the tabernacle had been used all of that time. Now, again, we don't have time to go through where was the ark all that time, where was what happened, because we know that the ark wasn't with them the whole time. But here we know that the ark was, and it's recorded for us in 2 Samuel that the ark was brought to Jerusalem by King David. So in your lesson, I'm going to skip Haggai for a minute. And so let's go down to day 3a, 2 Chronicles 5, 1 through 14, and 1 Kings 8, 10. So 1 Kings 8:10, it happened that when the priests came from the holy place, the cloud filled the house of the Lord, so that the priests could not stand and minister because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the house of the Lord. So which temple are we talking about here? Solomon's temple, correct? Mm-hmm. And where do we see the glory at this point? Where is the glory at?
In the cloud?
Where does it say the cloud is?
It's not. In the house of the Lord?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so where did you mark it on your map? Did everybody mark on the map?
No.
Okay, that's all right. For some, this might be helpful just to have an extra visual here. So this is going to represent, and I'm going to show you a picture of Herod's temple. This is going to represent essentially all three. So here in Solomon's temple, here's where the glory filled the temple, right? Is that everybody? See that?
So Solomon's temple is just a recreation of the original. Everything is still
Solomon's temple, right. So Solomon's temple was basically not going to be stationary anymore. It wasn't going to be the tabernacle, the tent of meeting. This is a stone structure.
It was going to be stationary.
Yes. This is not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. But it's built the same that God...
There's some specific... And again, I'm not going to... It's for sake of time, if you go back and you look at, there were very specific plan on the size and the dimensions.
That was different than the...
Yes. Yeah. There still was a Holy of Holies and a holy place.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Ezekiel 10, 1 through 19. What do you learn about God's glory there?
On the mountain.
On the mountain.
Verse 3, it
talks about being in the inner court.
Okay. Right, inner court.
Before it moves to the threshold.
Okay.
Verse 18, it moves over the cherubim.
Okay. And then, what is it, 19 that talks about going out the east gate?
Yeah, because the cherubim is over there.
Yeah.
The cherubim are there.
So here's the east gate, right? Then what, Ezekiel 11, 16 through 25. Where's God's glory and what do you see there? What's that, Betty?
It's on the mountain.
Right, on the mountain. So it's just kind of progressively out here to the Mount of Olives. And that's important when we look at some of the other, when we start looking at glory, where God's glory is. Does that make sense? Yes? So we know that...
So what temple is this in Ezekiel?
So as Ezekiel's, this is in reference to Solomon's temple. Because then when you look at, did I write him down? When we start looking at the millennial kingdom and the temple there, it's later on in Ezekiel. It's like 34, I think, is where we start to see that transition.
Wait a minute. I'm confused about something. Solomon's temple, you said, is that little square?
No, this whole complex is.
The entire thing is Solomon's temple.
Correct.
So what was that first little square? That with first star.
This one here?
The Holy of Holies.
This is the Holy of Holies.
Okay. And he filled the Holy of Holies.
Right.
Then he went on through.
Then basically he's just making his departure.
Okay.
And the verses just are showing the departure to the Mount of Olives.
Well, is that supposed to, what is that second star area called then?
That's where the bread is.
What's that?
So this one's going to be the holy place.
The holy place.
So you're going to have the table of showbread here.
Okay.
Okay. Does that make sense?
So it's the same, almost the same tabernacle as the movable one, but now Solomon has made it stationary.
Right.
God has directed.
So like they brought all the elements.
Right.
So the ark is in here, and this is. Again, Solomon has everything. The ark,
the utensils.
All the utensils, the candlestick, the table of showbread.
It's all the same.
And the altar incense. All the same as what we just studied in the tabernacle. So the only reason we're looking at that is just to look at progression of his glory and what we see as far as him being in Solomon's temple and then his glory leaving Solomon's temple.
So then he goes out to the Mount of Olives and that's where he goes up, right?
Yes, we're going to get there. Yes. Okay.
Well, I'm speeding along.
So, somebody's talking to me.
So, the glory departed, but there's places in Ezekiel where it talks about even though they're in exile, he can still be a sanctuary to them. What is the difference then between him being a sanctuary to his people wherever they are, and the glory of the way departing from the actual
people? That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know what? Obviously we know that God is omnipresent, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, here when we look, at least when we were looking at this lesson, we were looking at the visible manifestation of his presence in the temple, and I don't know if that answers your question or not. Does it? Kind of, sort of? Okay, so your next box that you have, the First Kings and the Chronicles, okay, is, so this is in the tabernacle. And so in your next box that's empty there, is God's glory in Solomon's temple. And so then we know that the temple's destroyed, Solomon's temple's destroyed, and then Israel goes to Babylon for 70 years. So they're captive in Babylon for 70 years due to idolatry and rebellion. Not a surprise again. And then in Ezekiel 10 and 11, the glory leaves Solomon's temple. Okay? So let's go back and let's look at Haggai and... So question number 310 on page 109. So the time frame of this is that there's been new leadership in Babylon, the Medes and the Persians. There's been a battle, and now there's a king that's come in and said, why don't you go back and rebuild your temple? Go back and rebuild your place of worship. And so these prophets are in the context of that, of returning to Jerusalem, and then obviously encouraging Zerubbabel to begin this rebuild process. So in Haggai 2, 3 through 9, what does God say he will bring into the house?
Glory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to bring his glory in.
And he talks about Jesus here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I left a box for Haggai and Zechariah. Zechariah. Because he is talking about encouraging them to rebuild what we would call the second temple. But we also know that the glory never inhabited Zerubbabel's temple or Herod's temple for a reason. And we're going to look at it a lot more next week. But so yes, Haggai is talking about, and this is all future, I will fill this house with glory. So with his presence. Yes, which is a reference to Jesus himself. So what is the latter glory spoken of in verse 9?
This is so confusing. So
I know, it's
hard.
The
latter is the temples that were created because... He never does inhabit Zerubbabel or Herod's temple. So
what's the next temple?
Christ.
Solomon.
When he comes
beyond that. Christ comes back.
And he sits on the throne for 1,000 years.
Okay. But there's going to be a temple in the millennial kingdom.
Right.
That's what he's talking about here.
He sits on the throne in the temple.
Right.
Right.
So there's a progression that was hard for me to kind of put in here because he's talking about this glory that's going to fill the house. Well, in one regard, in Jesus coming, his first coming, but he never went into the Holy of Holies or the Holy Place.
In this house.
In the Herod's temple. But he will, obviously, in the millennial
temple. Was Herod's
temple
completed?
Yeah, no, it was almost done.
So
I think
he it's not like a misspoke.
They were still working on the outer courtyard in 63.
So it was never completed.
No.
And Zerubbabel, was his completed?
Yes, his was done in 515.
God's glory never filled up.
Because there was no ark, for one.
Oh, okay.
No ark, and the purpose was that Jesus was going to be coming.
And that covers.
And that's pointing to all of this.
Taught to us, those are the reasons he did not.
Right.
And that's why it points to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does that help? Or does it muddy the waters more?
It's clear as mud.
Clear as mud. Okay.
Well, I get confused with all these things. I don't know, maybe my mind.
Well, and I think that's the thing is we didn't do a study on eschatology, and so I think that looking at a couple of verses, if you didn't get it, that's okay. I mean, I think the point is that there is a we're looking at this future plan from the very beginning.
See that. I can see a future plan. And
right.
But all these little digits in between, I can't get them.
And that's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. I still don't get all the digits in between them either.
We eventually will.
Yeah. I don't.
Yes, we eventually will. Yeah, and Zechariah, it says, I am coming and I will dwell in your midst. The Lord will possess Judah as his portion in the Holy Land and will choose Jerusalem. God will live again with Israel. So, I mean, there's when you're looking at prophecy, again, you've got to know, you can't just read that and not know anything else in the Bible.
Right.
And that's where you've got to pull in some of your presuppositions, because when is there really going to be peace? When is he going to really be dwelling and possessing land? When is that going to happen? Well, it hasn't happened. So then that must mean it's future. So if it's future, when is it going to happen? It's got to be during that 1,000-year millennial reign that occurs.
Right, there's no temple in the New Covenant of the
Earth. No, but that's different than the millennial kingdom.
But Jesus is.
Yeah, right.
But Jesus is the temple.
Yes.
There's no temple.
Right, the New Heaven and New Earth.
Is the temple.
Right.
I mean, there is a temple because he is the temple.
Correct.
That's what this is all directing us to.
Yes.
Yeah. God, he knows it.
Yeah.
He does. And again, we didn't give you enough to look into all this in detail, but we're going to move on. So just trust that is where we're going. Okay. So what promise does God give to Haggai in 2:8-9? We already looked at that.
To give his peace.
Yeah, to give his peace. Mm-hmm.
Which is that clue that this is the millennial kingdom that we're talking about. We're not talking about a former temple, and we're not talking about the final new heaven and new earth and new Jerusalem. We're talking millennial kingdom here.
Right.
Well, it's kind of cool, too, that it's the seventh month, and that was the month of the Day of Atonement.
Yeah. Like I said, I couldn't get into the time frame of things, but thank you, Patty.
That's cool.
Yeah, all these things are really...
It's all good, just that you want to get
right, right.
And what's awesome is that Jesus dwells within us, gives us the peace.
Yes.
Right, and all next week, that's what we're going to be looking at. Again, we had to separate the lessons out a little bit, so next week we're going to look at that. So Ezra talks about Zerubbabel rebuilding the temple, and we're not going to talk about all the things that transpired there, but he did complete it, and then many years later, Herod comes in, and just out of his own arrogance and desire to pacify the Jews, he puts a lot of money into restoring, rebuilding a temple in Jerusalem. But there was no glory and no ark. Okay. Okay, so our next box. This shouldn't be hard. The next box. Okay. So what does 2 Corinthians 4:6 say about the glory of God?
I mean, just the verse itself answers it perfectly. Mm-hmm. God shines in our hearts to give the light of knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ.
Right. Glory of God in the face of Christ.
He also is the one that I put down in him. He is also the one who illuminates our hearts through his word, which is Jesus Christ, who is the glory of God.
Okay. That's how we come to know him, yes. Yeah. So John 1:14, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. So what is John speaking about in this? Who is he speaking about, number one?
Jesus, the Son of God.
Thank you, Jeannie. Okay. And then what does John mean when he talks about this?
That God incarnated himself into the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
And he incarnated himself to become the Son of Man, Jesus, in the flesh to die for our sins.
Yeah.
And the invisible became visible. The infinite became finite. The eternal conformed to time. The invisible became visible.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful to think. I mean,
I know.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
It just sends chills up and down my spine.
I mean, his deity. Affirming his deity.
Did you say confirming or affirming?
Affirming.
Okay. The next reference was Colossians 1:19. Someone want to read that for us?
For it was the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in him.
Mm-hmm. So what is this... What does this teach us about Jesus here?
He's tabernacling with us.
Yeah.
Tabernacling.
Yeah.
And he is one with God, and God as man, and fully God, was to reconcile all things to himself.
Mm-hmm. A verse that I took out of this lesson when we were looking at it, only because I knew we were going to Hebrews someday. I want to just read this because I just absolutely love this. So God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. He is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. And when he sat down, when he had made purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high.
Well, that's a wonderful verse.
I know, isn't that?
What's the reference?
That's Hebrews 1:1-3.
So does that mean that God's Shekinah glory dwelt among man when Jesus was on earth?
Well, yes.
What was the question?
The duration.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the question?
Can you repeat your question, Alika?
Does the Hebrews verses mean that God's glory dwelt on earth with man again while Jesus was here?
Yeah, because I mean, certainly we see it in the Transfiguration, and in one regard, and again, we didn't go this route in the study either, but his glory is veiled when he's on earth, this first coming. Because we see that more clearly when we make the contrast in the millennial kingdom, where his glory just illuminates the earth, and so in some regard it was veiled when he was...
Well, sometimes it's shone forth, though, like...
Yes.
In different spots.
Right, right.
But he says in John 17, you know, that the glory that I once had...
Right.
Have that brightness that usually would have.
Well, I'm taking the form of man. I'm
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I would say, God came to dwell among us as a finite human being without sin, that we might see the glory of God through his word. And, you know, the fact that he dwells with us. Is this a question, Warren? What?
Which one are you answering, then I'll tell you.
Oh, 2B.
Oh, yeah. No, we were actually addressing a question that Aletha asked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So in one regard, it is veiled. There's still glory there, but it's veiled. So in the last two questions then on day 4 on the map, so Luke 2:27-32. Tell me where we see the glory here. Do you have that, Roseanne? Just wanted to wake you up a little bit back there.
Luke 2:27-32. 27. So he came by the Spirit into the temple, and when the parents brought him, and the child Jesus, to do for him according to the custom of the law. A light to bring revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel.
So where do we see him?
To the temple to be.
Okay, so he was
Jerusalem.
So he's brought to the temple. So I have a mat. I have something I'm having the ladies pass. Every rose got one. It's just an image of the of Herod's temple so that you can have a visual in your head. Okay, so where was Jesus seen here?
In the temple. In Jerusalem.
Okay. So if you think about where this would have been, Mary's bringing Jesus, so it's going to be the, and again you have to look at the picture, I gave my last picture away, the women's court, you can see where that is. Do you see that on the, anyway, it's the women's court, so yes, so he was there, because there were two things that needed to be done. He was a firstborn, so there was something that needed to be done with regard to that. And then her purification after having a baby, there was something that needed to be done in that point, too.
So all the laws were followed.
Right. Yes.
Do I pass this around, or is this for...
Yeah, no, it can be for your table, whatever, just so that you can see it. Okay. So in Luke, then, this Luke passage, where did you mark the red on your map? Jen?
Well, I just did kind of in that temple area. I didn't have the blown-up map. Not in the Holy of Holies, kind of in that outer...
This here somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, marked it all the way around it. Yeah.
Okay. And then Matthew 21:12. So 21:12 is, and Jesus entered the temple and drove out all those who were buying and selling in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who were selling doves. So again, this is Herod's temple. And any idea where that was? Kim, any idea?
Would that be the outer court?
Mm-hmm. So on this map, I'm going to take this for a second. So the yellow around here is the court of the Gentiles, and that's where that would have occurred. That's where the money changers were set up for them to come and change their money so that they could do what they needed to do in the temple. So it would have been the outer... the Gentile court. Okay, Acts 1. 9 through 12. This is number 5, day 4 on your assignment, on your study. So where do we, what do we see here and where is it? What's happening in this, in Acts?
A cloud receives him. Mm-hmm. And he returns.
He's ascending to heaven. Who is?
Jesus.
Okay.
And right. They're on the Mount of Olives.
Oh, they're on the Mount of Olives.
Yes.
Okay.
Sort of a key.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't see what time it is. Okay. All right. So the next, the last two boxes I have left blank here are, we looked at two verses, and again it was just hardly enough because John is teaching this stuff, so, which is great because it's going to help put all the pieces together, hopefully, for everybody. So the first verse we looked at on page 111. Oh, and I need to turn my map around again. I thought I was. Thought I was done. Okay. So Zechariah 14, 1 through 4. Someone want to read those for us?
Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the house is rifled, and the woman ravished. Half of this city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. And the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations, as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day the people stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north and half toward the south. Mm-hmm.
Where is that going to happen?
Mount of Olives.
Hmm. Someone read Acts 1:11.
And he also said, "Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into the sky? This Jesus, who has been taken up from you into the heaven, will come in just the same way as you have watched him go up into heaven."
Wow. What are the chances of that? Yeah. And again, this is after Armageddon and before he sets up his millennial kingdom.
So we traced the first in blue, and that was the glory leaving the temple.
Yes.
And that was because of the sin of Israel. So I don't understand tracing Jesus back from the temple to the Mount of Olives. And that has nothing to do with the sin of people.
Okay.
I don't get that connection.
Okay. So,
like, why are we focusing on, like, when he's a baby in the temple?
We're just talking about his glory, his presence, the presence of God, visible manifestation of his presence.
This was everywhere in Jerusalem.
Right, but God is, it's like intricately interwoven. I mean, God.
It's like if we talked about him being omnipresent, then we're done.
Right.
Well, we have nothing. Then
the presence was all over Israel.
True.
But he's showing how he lived. Showing how God in the cloud went to Mount Olives, and how His Son, who is God, will do the same. Like, it's just amazing.
Well, it's like God's glory and His presence. Even if you didn't even look at any of this, and you only got to hear and understood this, that His glory leaves.
It's the Mount of Olives.
Okay.
It's the second tracing of Jesus
Well, it could be everywhere, right? But I used a couple of distinct verses that talk about him specific to the vicinity of the temple. Because that's what we've been talking about, is the tabernacle and the temple.
It's his bodily presence and the glory.
Yeah.
The problem is motivation.
Yeah.
Well, right. You see the glory presence, and so his presence is there, but
it's, she's trying to trace it. But it's a different motivation.
Right, yeah.
So the activity is the same, the movement is the same, but the motive.
Yeah, I guess I just like where in scripture we draw attention to the fact that his presence clearing out the temple had to do with connected to the Shekinah glory of the Lord.
Because he was angry.
Well, but I see what she's saying. But I think the thing is that we're if you just look transitory at God's glory and his presence. And yes, Jesus was everywhere. He walked. He was in Nazareth. He was in Bethlehem. But again, just looking at from specifically relating to the temple, that's what our attention was on.
Right. And because in Revelation, he will come back to Mount. He will come the same way he left on the same mountain and has split it into a valley.
Which is what Zechariah is talking about, him returning.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Mount of Olives, when he comes back, he's coming to the Mount of Olives, and that's where he was when he ascended.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is exactly, the angel said he's going to come back the way in which he left.
Mm-hmm. Which is where the cloud of God in the tabernacle also departed.
So technically in Ezekiel, when we talk about the glory of the Lord departing out into the Mount of Olives, when Ezekiel finishes talking about the millennial kingdom, he says the glory of God comes back not to the Mount of Olives, it says it comes back to the temple.
Ezekiel 43:4 says God's glory comes from the way of the east. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's some connection with the east all the way from the beginning of Genesis. Something from the east. And I'm not sure why the east, but it's just...
Was that the pagan practice, they were sun worshippers and the sun setting in the west.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense.
And that's why God was always pointing his people towards the east to show that he was altogether different than the idols, the nations worship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even before all the pagans came up, they were still sent out east of Eden.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
That's a purpose.
Right.
God isn't reacting to somebody doing something hanky-panky down here. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so we know that Jesus Christ is going to return the way he departed. So as the glory left Solomon's temple when Jesus physically ascended into heaven after his resurrection. So in the millennial kingdom, you didn't look at these verses, but I'm just going to share a couple of them with you if you want to write them down in your little, in the box that was your second box under Zechariah 14. So he's going to be regathering Israel. There's going to be reinstatement of worship in Israel. And his land, as promised, is going to be restored to Israel, all within the kingdom. Age. And then Jeremiah 31:31 through 33, which we've looked at. Behold, days are coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. I will put my law within them and on their heart, and I will write it, and I will be their God, and they shall be your people. Jerusalem is going to be rebuilt for the Lord in Jeremiah 31:38, and that's what we're talking about, is the millennial kingdom. The laws, the feasts, and the Sabbaths are all going to be carried into the millennial kingdom. The city from that day forward shall be called the Lord is there, which is Yahweh is there all the way around. So that idea of dwelling but filling, and I love that there's no coincidence there, that he's going to dwell in their midst. On the throne of David and his kingdom, rule and reign in Jerusalem, Revelation 19:16. Only true believers, so Jews and Gentiles alike, will be in the millennial kingdom. So Revelation 21 through 22, and I don't have time to read that. In the future, where will Jesus Christ dwell?
right-hand side of this continent.
The New Earth.
What's that?
New Earth.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that final box of Revelation 21 through 22 is there so that you can write in where Jesus Christ is going to dwell there. Was there anything else you picked up when you looked at those verses that were kind of specific to God's glory in those chapters?
Well, that God will dwell within us, which is Jesus, and for the believer, and
okay, there's that time frame, but we're looking future.
And also, in the future, there's not going to be any temple needed. No sun, no moon, that's how radiant God's glory is.
Yes.
Whereas in the tabernacle, you have all these things reflecting God's glory.
Yes.
We don't need any of that.
Because all of that was the shadow.
Because
we've been talking about that every week, that it's the shadow of what's to come.
Transfiguration on the mountain. That was veiled because that was the
yes, right.
But in the New Jerusalem, it's not veiled.
Yeah.
I think also just reading through the Bible, and we're always so sad. They don't get it. They don't get it. They don't get it. They don't get it. They got it.
They got it.
That's so cool.
I know.
One third gets it.
Yeah.
Something Belinda was referring to about God's glory departing, and yet his glory is gone from the temple because of their sin and no Sabbaths. And
right.
But with that individual who believes, the faithful individual who believes, he is there. Mm-hmm. And so that is so, that builds my faith. And it builds my trust and my hope in him. It's always around him anyway.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing when you just look at everything again from Genesis to Revelation. There was always a remnant. There was Noah, there was always a remnant that just kept that thread that goes all the way through the old and into the new. So
this was really
yes.
cool. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for this whole lesson. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is
one. I think one other thing about the new heaven and the new earth, because I was just there all this week. In my mind, I was just there.
Why would you come back?
I wouldn't. But I thought in 22:4 it says, "All will see his face." The dwelling place of the redeemed and that perfect relationship and fellowship with him is perfectly restored as back in Genesis in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't fathom being sinless. I can't fathom being in his presence and having that perfect relationship and fellowship. And we'll have that with him and we'll have relationship with each other. So let's close. Father, I praise you and thank you that you have a perfect plan, that from beginning of time before the foundations of the earth, Lord, you have this plan from every second, every detail, the things that have already come to pass, that you have been faithful to your promises. And Lord, I know that there is so much that will occur in the future, and some of which we do not fully understand. And yet we can trust you knowing that we have your Spirit living within us. And we know that you have a purpose for the Jews that hasn't been completed yet. I thank you that you will rule and reign, and that your glory will illuminate all the earth. Just thank you, Lord, that someday we will see you face to face, mm-hmm. and that we will have that perfect and restored, sinless fellowship with you, that we would worship you in spirit and in truth. Just praise you, Lord, for that. I pray as we go to our groups that our time of discussion around your word would not be distracted by maybe things we still don't understand, but that it would be that which we could come away with this lesson with a deeper understanding of who you are and how we should respond to this mm-hmm. truth. May our lives be changed as a result of studying your word. Mm-hmm. In your precious name, I pray. Amen. Mm-hmm.